and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
NAFTA. 10 years ago, Congress passed NAFTA. It was supposed to boost our economy. Instead, we lost millions of jobs and the nation is still hurting. But now Congress is quietly considering doing it again, but worse this time, by creating a free trade area of the Americas, also called the FTAA. This would outsource millions more American jobs and businesses. How can our country survive this devastation again? Learn how you can help. Visit www.stoptheftaa.org or call 1-800-JBS-USA1. Log on to our website and let Congress know that you think FTAA is not an option for America's future. Stop the FTAA.org and keep American jobs in America.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Anything changed now? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here tonight with us on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday. It is the 9th of February. In the year 2005, I thought this was going to be a tremendously long, hard winter. And here we are, almost in the middle of February, and spring is right around the corner. I must say that this winter was much, much easier and much more peaceful than last winter, the first winter that I spent without Chuck in 7 years. And we've had some actually fairly warm days here, folks, which is nice, isn't it, since the cost of heating has gone up so high. Wayne Blanchard can't be with us tonight. I'm totally changing the subject on us. And I got new ribbons for my printer, and I bought the wrong new ribbons, so I had to make a quick decision tonight what I wanted to share with you. First of all, our spiritual message. This is in John 8, verse. We'll start here with 27. Let's start with verse 25. They said unto him, Who are you? Who art thou? And Jesus said unto them, Even the same that I said unto you from the beginning. I have many things to say and to judge of you, but he that sent me is true. And I speak to the world those things which I have heard of him. He that has sent me. They understood not that he spake to them of the Father. And then Jesus said unto them, When ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am he, and that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. And he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. Does that sound like somebody who's claiming to be the Creator, folks? That was in red. Those were quotes allegedly attributed to Jesus. And I had no particular reason for doing that. Tonight I opened up the book and that was a highlight that I had there, and I hadn't done that, so I thought maybe there's more food for thought for us, yes? We've just very recently gone through another celebration of the Holocaust, so-called Holocaust. I have a little book here titled The 6 Million Swindle. It's a little teeny tiny book. I'm going to read to you from it tonight. This book, this is titled The 6 Million Swindle, Blackmailing the German People for Hard Marks with Fabricated Corpses. This is by Austin J. App, Ph.D., App, A-P-P. He's associate professor at the time, associate professor of English, retired from LaSalle College in Philadelphia. It says in very small print here on the cover, the writer, born and raised in Wisconsin, holds a M.A. and Ph.D., degrees in English literature from Catholic University, Washington, D.C., was instructor or professor of English at several colleges, including Catholic University, University of Scranton, LaSalle College, and has written hundreds of articles and reviews and 8 books. For 10 years, he was chairman of the Pastorius Unit of the Steuben Society in Philadelphia. For 6 years, was national president of the Federation of American Citizens of German Descent, of which he is now honorary president. He has also, for the last few years, been chairman of the Greater Philadelphia Captive Nations Committee and considers the liberation of these nations, including the Soviet zone of Germany, and the dissolution of the Soviet-Russian colonialism the only hope of preventing World War III. This book was published December 15, 1973 by Boniface Press, and it was republished August 15, 1976. This was a German-born American. I mean, American-born of German descent. I'm sorry. I wanted to give you that bio on him, so it lends credibility. And this is credible, what you're going to hear, the 6 million swindle. Inasmuch as the Talmudists claim to be God's chosen people and press this claim with the world's worst smear terrorism, anyone undertakes with fear and trembling the exposure of what one Christianized Jew, Benjamin Friedman, headlines, brainwashed U.S. Christians duped by unholiest hoax in all history. He was alluding to the fervently propagandized myth that the Nazis gassed 6 million Jews, because all defamatory propaganda ultimately does a lot of harm, usually in the long run, to both the defamed and the defamers. A search for the truth is mandatory. It was Christ long ago, crucified by the brood of vindictive Talmudists, who first warned them against their eye for an eye-ism. Chancellor Brandt in Israel was pelted with egg and pamphlets. This is a heading suggesting the harm the 6 million swindle can do. We relate a few incidents during a German Chancellor Willy Brandt's June visit to Israel. Brandt, born illegitimately from F-R-A-H-M, his mother having reputedly been raped by a Jew, passionately hated the law and order anti-smut Nazis. He passionately hated the law and order anti-smut Nazis. During the whole war, he spied for Soviet Russia and so hated the Christian German people that in several Norwegian books he incited partisan activities against it and even urged German soldiers to frog their officers. I don't know what that means. It's in quotes, frog their officers. Yet, how was this frenzied anti-Nazi treated on his goodwill tour to Israel, which had his hand stretched for a new round of marks to supplement the $20-plus billion already blackmailed out of the West German people? Now, this is in 76, folks. And in Hans Schmidt's book, End Times, what is it called? Whatever. In his book, that's maddening. I can almost see the title of that book. But anyway, the German people are still paying, by the way, reparations to the Jews. But guess where it's all going? Over to Israel. How many Jews do you think are really getting that money? And he's talking here, this author is talking, in 1973, already $20-plus billion, with a B, dollars, already blackmailed out of the West German people. The International Tribune, June 1973, headlined Brandt's visit. It said, quote, Brandt is target of protesters in Jerusalem visit. Excuse me for the background noise here. Whoops. I just knocked some stuff over, as you probably heard. The article said, boys burned a facsimile of a Nazi swastika flag outside City Hall. About 150 demonstrators restrained by barricades in front of City Hall shouted, go home and we shall not forgive, in reference to the Nazi killing of 6 million Jews as Brandt arrived for a reception given by Mayor Teddy Kollek. Placards proclaimed, you slaughtered 6 million of our brothers and sisters, go home. Two other boys burned a piece of cardboard with a black swastika painted in the center. To quote the International Tribune again, it said, quote, as Mr. Brandt arrived at City Hall, a young girl behind the barricades threw an egg at him. Security men tried to catch it, but it splattered in his hand, the yolk spewing over the back of an Israeli official. Mr. Brandt did not react, and security men whisked him inside. The girl fled. Another youth threw a handful of leaflets at the chancellor. The leaflets bore reference to the Nazi era. Over and over, ad nauseum, we hear communists, Talmudists, and brainwashed liberals declare pontifically that the Nazi had orders to execute all Jews. Yet the same article in the International Tribune, which is published by the Jewish New York Times and the Washington Post, goes on to remark, listen to this, folks, the article that he was quoting from the International Times, about 500,000 of Israel's 2.6 million Jews had been in a Nazi concentration camp, end quote. The author says, but if 500,000 Jews now in Israel survived Nazi concentration camps, then the Nazis evidently had no orders to, quote, gas them. Obviously, then, Hitler and the Third Reich had no plan or desire to exterminate all Jews. They had plenty of time to have executed these 500,000. Therefore, as my first incontrovertible point, the charge that Hitler and the Third Reich wanted to exterminate all Jews is a totally fabricated, brazen lie. Because the Jews, quite probably, in Theodor and Kaufmann's Germany Must Perish, and in parentheses here, Kaufmann's book Germany Must Perish, he said, by sterilization, and Henry Morgenthau's Germany Is Our Problem, Extermini by Starvation. They were just out to get the German people, weren't they, folks? Those were barbarous enough to have plotted the extermination of 100 million Germans. Their guilt complex forced them to imagine that the Germans, too, could have been equally barbarous so as to want to exterminate Europe's 6 million Jews. But, of course, the Germans and the Nazis were Christian gentlemen compared to the Morgenthauist savages. The Talmudists have, from the beginning, used the 6 million swindle to blackmail West Germany into atoning with the $20 billion of indemnities to Israel. They put enough pressure on Washington not to sign the American-German Treaty for German autonomy until Adenauer agreed to such indemnities to a bastard state that had not even existed during the era of the Third Reich. But not only has Israel blackmailed West Germany into subsidizing it, Israel and world Jewry have also blackmailed it with the figure of 6 million into paying pensions and indemnities to every Jew who survived Nazi-occupied Europe, and millions who, after the war, sneaked into West Germany from behind the Iron Curtain. And then claim to have suffered under the Nazis. Claiming such indemnities has probably produced the greatest heyday in history for Jews to commit perjury for one another. And for fraud and lying and cheating on a horrendous scale. Two examples. Dr. Phil Auerbach, concentration camp survivor, got himself appointed Bavarian Commissioner of Reparations. In 1952, he was finally caught and sentenced to 2.5 years in prison for huge frauds and swindles in his behalf and that of his co-racialists. He thereupon shot himself. Professor Hans Deutsch got $8.5 million marks from Bonn for various clients. He then asked for 30, it might be 85, that this might be a typo. Professor Hans Deutsch got 85 million marks from Bonn for various elements. For various clients. He then asked for 35 million marks for the Hungarian Havatny art collection, which he claimed the Nazis had stolen. This luckily could be proven a lie, and he got 18 months in prison. In reality, he should have been hanged. The frauds in connection with pressuring indemnities out of Bonn cry to heaven for exposure and rectification. And here are some examples of personal indemnities. One can assume that every one of the 500,000 Jews in Israel who claim to have been in German concentration camps is bleeding Germany for indemnities. Here are some examples. U.S. News. Quote, looking at some individual cases, August 10, 1964, lists a Jewish businessman who now lives in the U.S. who has received a total of $32,500 in damages and gets monthly compensation of $220 a month besides. That was in 64. The widow of a Jewish doctor who was forced to emigrate in 1939 and died in South Africa 5 years later has received $25,000 and is entitled to $7,000 in additional restitution payments. Now, that's end quoting. Now, there are two likely falsehoods in this last item. In 1939, her husband was hardly forced to leave. The German government let him leave with his property. And I don't know how much you've read, folks, about those times. If you are interested in maybe getting a little bit closer to the truth than what we've been told, if you go into our website at sweetliberty.org and you go into the section, How Wars Are Made Behind the Scenes, we have the book, Germany and England, the little booklet by Nesta Webster in there. We have Captain A.H.M. Ramsey's The Nameless War. We have the book online that I read. In fact, when I came on to 5070 in August of 2000, that was last year, wasn't it, 2003? No, yeah, 2003, excuse me. I was reading Witness to History to you, to our listeners. That book is online. And this has been written by many various people. I recall asking Alan Watt quite a while ago how he knew that the books he was reading were truth. And Alan stated, and this is very reasonable, that you're never going to get all the truth out of one book. But if you read enough books by enough different authors, and there is always the thread, the same thread running through them, you know that there is truth there. And this is what I have based my information on. When you keep reading the same thing from different authors, from my understanding, Adolf Hitler, he did kick the Jews, the bankers, out. We know that. He kicked them out of the educational arena. He kicked them out of government. He kicked them out of any place where they might have the same type of influence on the people and the young people that they have today in the United States of America, and of course in just about every country, or anywhere in every country where they've gained the kind of control that they have here, and the same kind of control that they had in Germany under the Weimar Republic before Adolf Hitler became chancellor. He allowed them, the people who owned businesses, he allowed them to stay. He allowed them to leave. And if I recall, the agreement was that if they had not left Germany within 5 years, then the state will confiscate their businesses. But they were allowed to leave with all their belongings. A lot of Jews emigrated, and guess what? A lot of Jews elected to stay. When Samuel Untermeyer did his declared the holy war against Germany in August of 1933, that would have been very shortly after Adolf Hitler became chancellor. He mentioned the 600,000 Jews that were in Germany at the time. So in Germany alone, according to him, there were only 600,000 at the beginning. A lot of them left, folks. And I've read the information about the transfer agreement. Basically, the way it is presented is that Adolf Hitler helped to establish Israel. From my understanding and what I have read, he made a deal. They actually taught the German Jews agriculture so that when they went to Israel, they would be able to be self-sufficient. He wanted them out of Germany, pure and simple. And from what we see today, we understand why. And it isn't the lesser brethren, the ones that are being used the same way that Christian, Judeo-Christian, or Christian Zionists are being used. But the problem with the lesser brethren is that they actually believe that Jehovah is the creator, and that they are the special chosen people, and that their destiny is to rule the world. And until they forego that, they're just as dangerous as the elite who are in charge. All right, back to the book. The Third Reich let Jews emigrate exactly as world Jewry now wants Soviet Russia to let them emigrate. But for which Soviet Russia requires some $30,000 for each immigrant. Nor is the widow entitled to anything from Germany, but the Jews have so blackmailed it with the 6 million swindle that it pays and pays and pays. U.S. News further reports, a rabbi forced to flee from Berlin and now living in Brazil gets a pension of $500 a month. Off the backs of the German people in West Germany. How was he forced to flee? He more probably, like the Kissinger family, wanted to. And Nazi Germany let him without requiring an emigration tax of some $30,000. Here's another instance from the newspaper report. A Jew who passed a civil service exam in pre-war Germany but was barred from the job because he was Jewish emigrated to Israel. West Germany sends him $187 a month, the pension he would have earned in following a civil service career in Germany. What an impudent blackmail. What would happen in the U.S. if every Jew and every Negro and every Gypsy who took and passed the civil service exam but was not hired because a lot of others passed the exam too? What would happen? What would happen if all of them would forever have to be pensioned by the American taxpayers? This section, this heading, Why Bolsheviks Support the 6 Million Swindle. Aside from the fact that most of the most vindictive communists are also Jews, like Ilya Ehrenberg, the Soviet propaganda minister who exhorted the Soviet troops to rape all German women and kill any men who tried to protect them. The general run of communists, Soviet Russians and others, eagerly help Israel and world Jewry to propagate the 6 Million swindle. They have a mighty good motive. It is to cover up as long as possible the grim fact that more Jews come to grief in territory controlled by Stalin than in Nazi-occupied lands. This horrid truth Talmudic leaders well know. But they also know that from the Bolsheviks, whether in Moscow or in Warsaw or even in East Berlin, they cannot blackmail reparations for either real or fabricated Jewish corpses. Therefore, they maintain a conspiracy of silence about Jews persecuted and killed in red-dominated lands so as to blackmail the West Germans and, in fact, all Christians more effectively. Statistics on Jews who disappeared in red-controlled areas. In Stalin's macabre relocation plan, from this is an article in Human Events, October 6, 73. John Boland cites how the Bolsheviks murdered 4,143 Polish prisoners of war at Katyn, I don't know how to pronounce that, K-A-T-Y-N, 4,143 Polish prisoners murdered and packed another 10,000 in barges and sank them in the White Sea. He then reports, quote, "Now there is evidence that thousands of Soviet Jews were similarly eliminated on orders from Stalin. The exact number cannot be ascertained because the victims were allegedly loaded in boxcars and rolled over a cliff into Russia's huge Siberian freshwater lake. The forcible deportation of all Soviet Jews to the Jewish Soviet Republic of Borodjan ended, for many of them, in being pushed over the cliff into the lake." The Jewish Soviet Republic. Okay, we're going to take a break here. I hope you get your pen in hand, folks, and take my address down. If you would like to see this broadcast continue, we are still hung at about $7,000 in arrears. Means we're not getting worse. Means we took a $7,000 chunk out of that broadcast bill in a matter of 3 months, but we're still hanging at $7,000 in arrears, and we cannot let it go higher. So take my address if you would like to become a participating listening sponsor. I'll be here. You stay with us.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, we're back here. And folks, I want to say to you, those of you who are sponsoring this broadcast, some of you send donations from time to time, and some of you are like clockwork. I want to thank you, each and every one of you. My correspondence, as I've told you, is one of the very last things that gets done. The last time I sent out a mailing to many of our newer sponsors was last year, and I haven't gotten to it this year, but you must forgive me. There are just so many things you can get done in a day, and around here now, if it's going to get done, it's done by me. When I'm doing one thing, everything else is waiting for me also. So please, you each of you know who you are. Please accept my deep thanks and my expression of admiration for you, that you give as well as receive. Thank you. Let's get back to this book. I'm reading from a book. If you happen to tune in a little late, it's titled The 6 Million Swindle by a professor, Austin J. App. App. No, it's App. A-P-P. This is written in 1973, and he is exposing the swindle and the lie of the Holocaust, the Holocaust. So anyway, he tells here in this article in Human Events, he said, in this way, the, quote, Jews could be liquidated without the trouble of building crematoria. He had just said that it has been said that in Russia, the forcible deportation of all Soviet Jews to the Jewish Soviet Republic of Borobudur ended for many of them in being pushed over the cliff into the lake. The Jews, in this way, the writer says, the Jews could be liquidated without the trouble of building crematoria, as Hitler did in Germany to solve his Jewish problem. And the author of this book says, incidentally, it is a defamatory cliché that Hitler built crematoria to dispose of murdered Jews. He built them to dispose of corpses in general, including especially those resulting from their Allied air raids. Confirming human events, Rabbi Benjamin Schultz, chairman of the Jewish League of Hamburg, of September 25th, 1954, declared before our Congress that during the Second World War, 3,390,000 Jews on Soviet territory disappeared without a trace. He maintained that this massacre has been purposely kept secret so as not to embarrass the Soviet Union. German historian Eric Kern, after research on Rabbi Schultz's startling statement, concludes that even if this figure is a bit too high, he said, however, in any case, it is certain that about twice as many Jews were done to death in territory controlled by Soviet Russia than in that controlled by the Germans. And he quotes a German site for that. What can be more to the advantage of the Bolsheviks than to have got rid of a few million troublesome Jews and to waltz the blame off on Germans? And what could be more to the advantage of Israel and world Jewry than to blame the Germans, who could be blackmailed into astronomical reparations for the Jews who disappeared in Russia, from which absolutely no indemnities could be blackmailed? However, this mass Soviet extermination, which world Jewry finds it inexpedient to recognize, may help explain the worldwide viciousness with which Jews belabor the Soviet Union for not permitting free Jewish emigration, something the Bolsheviks didn't permit, don't permit for anybody else either, not even for the forlorn Germans left in the Oder Neisse territories, or for East Germans who want to transfer to West Germany. When the Germans advanced into Bolshevik territory, most Jews retreated towards Moscow in the wake of the Soviet armed forces. But it's also tragically true, but not willingly publicized, that many thousands of Jews who did not migrate east in time were massacred, not by the Wehrmacht, but by the angry native populations before the Germans arrived. The Jews in general had so intensely identified themselves with Red oppression from 1917 on that the native population often revenged themselves at the first opportunity. What helped inflame the native fury is that the retreating Soviets committed wholesale massacres upon persons who opposed Soviet rule, whom they had arrested when the Germans invaded, but had no chance to transport to Siberia because the German advance was too fast. Hermann Rockhofer, in Political Assassination, page 231, obtainable from Boniface Press, writes of, quote, incontrovertible proof that many murders committed against the inhabitants of Loire of Lemberg had also taken place before Loire was occupied by the Germans. Responsibility for these earlier atrocities lies with the Soviet authorities. Loire, that's L-W-O-W, is typical of what occurred in other cities. In Loire alone, 3,000 corpses executed by the retreating Soviets were counted. Well, he's talking about here Now, the Polish persecution of Jews. It says, by whomsoever Jews come to Greece, the Third Reich has been blamed, and West Germany has been made to pay enormous reparations. One of the nastiest slanders, second only to world Jewry, is Red Poland. It also, by magic coincidence, found that the Nazis killed 6 million innocent Poles. When pressed, it lists as Poles 3 million Jews allegedly killed, and it includes a massacre of all Poles who fell in combat. The Poles swine as if their soldiers had had a right to shoot, not the Germans. There, too, speaks a guilty conscience, for the Poles have personally persecuted the Jews, and during and even after World War II, they killed many of them. I'm going to skip over here. Many respected writers stoop to lying in order not to arouse the smear terrorism of the 6 million fabricators. John Gunther, for example, wrote, and let it never be forgotten, that of the 3,500,000 Polish Jews who lived in that country before the war, not less than 3 solid millions were murdered by the Germans. The total number of Jews surviving in Poland is only between 70 and 80,000. That was in the Philadelphia Inquirer, February 10, 1949. Who pressured Gunther? The author asks. Who pressured Gunther into this monstrous and illogical falsehood? In 1939... Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, you've been censored.
Sorry?
This is Jim in Tennessee.
Hi, Jim.
You have been censored, obviously.
Why?
You went blank.
I went blank.
And now they're playing that song. Can you hear it?
That means I'm disconnected, probably.
Right, you've been censored.
Oh, Jim. Okay, thanks for calling in, honey.
Right. You know, something I read several years ago was that persecution of Jews, that was the atheist Jews killing the religious Jews.
Ah. Yeah, Jim, I better see if I need to get reconnected, honey.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling and telling me. Folks, I don't know, maybe I better disconnect here and try calling back in. I don't know if the disconnect came from... Okay. Well, I don't know what's going on the shortwave, folks. At least we're on the Internet. Jim called from Tennessee and said that they were playing the Sweet Liberty intro. All right. So the author asks, who pressured Gunther into this monstrous and illogical falsehood? In 39, there were 1939... There were 12 million native Germans in the Oder-Neisse territory put under Polish administration in 1945. 12 million of them. Wow. Now there are at most a few hundred thousand. Would it be logical to say the other 11,800,000 were tortured and murdered? Of course. Only 80,000 Jews were in Red Poland by 1949. Its smarter ones had left that Jew-hating country and swarmed into the haven of Germany to claim indemnity, and from there to New York and to Israel. When Colonel Albert Morgan, some months after the war, said that the Jews were leaving Poland in organized masses, Walter Lipschitz, Winchell, screamed that the statement, quote, was an insult to 6 million tortured dead. See Time magazine, January 21st, 1946. During a, quote, major anti-Jewish pogrom at Kielce on July 4, 1946, writes Richard Harwood. Did 6 million Jews really die? Historical Review Press, London, 1984. Page 17 says, more than 150,000 Polish Jews suddenly fled into Western Germany. He adds, their appearance was somewhat embarrassing, and their emigration to Palestine and the U.S. was carried out in record time. Subsequently, the number of Polish Jews survivors underwent considerable revision in the American Jewish Yearbook, 1948-49. It was placed at 390,000, quite an advance on the original 80,000. And nor does Gunther allude to Jews killed by the Poles, nor the very significant fact that some half of the 3,500,000 Jews allegedly in Poland in 39 were in fact in the eastern Ukrainian Poland, which the Soviet Russians occupied in 39. One can, without far more evidence, assert that more Jews died in Poland and Russia while under Red control than while under German control. Statistics of Jews spared by the Nazis. What has to be absolutely established before anything else is that the Nazis had no plan and no wish to exterminate all Jews. To say they had is a lie. If they had had such a plan, absolutely no Jew in Nazi-dominated territory would have survived. The Third Reich was too efficient for any Jews to escape had it wished to exterminate all Jews, but the Third Reich only wanted them to emigrate. When I visited Germany and Austria in 1949, I found them deluged with uncouth-looking Eastern Jews. They were arrogant to all Germans. They all seemed to engage in black marketing, and the German police seemed forbidden to touch them. They lied, cheated, and stole from Germans almost at will. In the currency revolution, Germans had to surrender 100 marks for 10 new ones, but Jews, including refugees from the East, got 100 new marks for 100 old. This huge indemnity paid to them is not mentioned in the books, but it gave the Jews a 10-to-1 advantage over honest Germans in Central Europe. Here are some figures of Jews who turned up from German-occupied lands after the war. Everyone proves that Hitler had not ordered him exterminated. The New York Times, March 26, 1950, reports that in March of that year, 23,000 Jews had left Hungary, that 224,000 Jews had emigrated from the People's Democracies and from Yugoslavia, leaving 600,000 whom the Israeli government is still eager to have in Palestine. The Times writes of 150,000 still left in Hungary, 30,000 having emigrated from Czechoslovakia, leaving 15,000 there. Of 30,000 having left Romania, leaving 380,000 there. Of 85,000 having left Poland, leaving 50,000 registered as members of the Jewish community. It is believed that some thousands of others are unregistered. The Times writes that, quote, from Bulgaria, 42,000 have emigrated, leaving only 4,000 or 5,000. From Yugoslavia, 10,000 have emigrated. Had Hitler intended to exterminate all Jews, he had 5 years' time to gas all 824,000 Balkan Jews who, according to the New York Times, swarmed into the western zones of Germany between 45 and 47. And even higher percentages were very much alive in 1945 in France, Belgium, Holland, and Norway. One rabbi, Philip Bernstein, advisor of Jewish affairs to the U.S. Army commanders in Germany and Austria, wrote, quote, the only realistic solution to the plight of Europe's 250,000 Jewish refugees is resettlement in the United States and Palestine. That was in the Washington Post, October 24, 1947. That may explain why since 1945, New York is a Jewish Sodom and Gomorrah, and Washington, D.C., a half Jewish and half Negro employment agency. Yet, in spite of these Jewish survivors, all of these Jewish survivors, one vindictive German phobe, David Barak, in the Jewish press, September 72, Rosh Hashanah issue, dares to write, quote, "The German Nazi would not rest so long as one Jew lived anywhere, and even as their defeat was starkly apparent, they lived for one thing, to kill as many Jews as possible before the end." This is the kind of monstrous, barefaced lying of which only communists and Jews are capable. Vindictive Jews seem intent on proving Christ right when he denounced Jews in language far harsher than Hitler ever applied to them. He said, "Ye are of your father, the devil, for he is a liar and the father thereof." First, David Barak lies on a specific point, for far from a policy of killing as many Jews as possible before the war ended, Himmler, in October 1944, prohibited any further execution of Jews. This order also indicates that Himmler, not Hitler, was in charge of Jewish policy. Secondly, David Barak, of course, commits an overall lie. If the Nazis had proposed living to kill as many Jews as possible, then not one single one of the 824,000 Balkan and Polish Jews would have been alive by May 1945. Jews who spread such vindictive lies ought to strangle themselves in their own guts and spare the world their venom. Hitler's Endlösung, I can't pronounce that, it's German, meant emigration, not extermination. It's the word Endlösung. The Third Reich did no more plan or even think of physically annihilating Jews, other than partisans and subversives, than it thought of making stew out of them. Only a cannibal fears that a conqueror will eat him. So only genocidists like Morgenthau, Kaufman, and Ilya Ehrenberg, wretches wallowing in the Talmud 2,000 years backward of Christianity, reflecting their own plots to exterminate the German race, could hit upon the slander of accusing the Nazis of trying literally to kill them off. What the Nazis wanted is what every civilized country has wanted, and five of them put into practice, namely to get the Jews out of their hair, all of them, to have them emigrate. That's what the word Endlösung, final solution, meant, and nothing else. Every civilized nation has wanted to get rid of them, and everyone except so far the U.S. has at one time or another expelled its Jews. Good old glorified England did it in 1290, France in 1306, 1322, and 1394. Both are dear allies in twice destroying Germany. Hungary expelled them in 1349, Austria in 1420, Spain in 1492, Sicily in 1492, Portugal in 1497. Several German and Italian and Balkan provinces did it between 1350 and 1450. Norway and Sweden in 1814. And our dearly beloved Lend-Lease Pal Russia, in part, expelled the present blackmailers of Germany in 1792 and 1904. What the Nazis tried to do was therefore, first of all, quite in tune with the historical and civilizing development in Europe. It was neither unique nor especially national socialistic. Only the U.S., having been until recently a huge colonizing area, has so far not expelled unassimilating Jews. They now control the media and the money and sex education and pornography. They also, this was written in 73, folks. They now, this is what the author said, they now control the media and the money and sex education and pornography. They also furnish far more than their quota of grand arsonists, like Bernard Kornfeld, who made and broke the IOS, and Stanley Goldblum, president, Equity Funding Corp, the largest bank fraud in recent history. They also got us into World War II and then converted the peace into barbarism with their Morgenthau plan. And recently, in the Arab-Israeli war, they pressured the government into rushing armaments to the Israelis instead of getting them to return to the 1967 boundaries. It thus provoked the wretched energy crisis. In short, they subvert our international standards and our Christian culture. Why did they want to get the Jews out? This is what the Jews had done in Germany during the Weimar Republic. Most objectionable was their assault on patriotism, on love of country, in which they were virtually guests. Of such Jewish anti-patriotism, America got a taste during the Vietnam War. Nation Europa, this is a German thing, February 1964, 8 pages, explained that all the bloody communist putsches in Weimar Germany were directed by Jews. The Jewish persecution were directed by Jews, such as Eugen Levin, Max Levin, Tobiah Axelrod, Kurt Eisner, Gustav Landauer, Eric Musam, and Ernst Thaler. It should have added Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht, leaders of the vicious Red Spartacus Party. When the pamphlet by Nation Europa first appeared, I reviewed it with two paragraphs, which I here reconfirm. It says, but worst of all had been that all through the Weimar Republic, a majority of intellectuals had written and writers had indulged in continual defamation of the German nation. Walter Mehring called the Stahlhelm soldiers of World War I dreck, i.e. dirt. Kurt Tucholsky called the volunteers of 1914 victims of mass intoxication. Arnold Zweig called Germans a nation of cattle and murderers. It was such destructive nihilism directed by German Jews against the German nation in the Weimar era that brought resentment and sparked the National Socialistic conviction that such vicious pro-communistic influence must be eliminated from public life. I have to stop here, folks. This little book is only 37 pages long. I wonder if this is available from Sons of Liberty. The 6 million swindle, it's called. Maybe one of these days we'll get it transcribed and get it on our website. We're about out of time here tonight. I appreciate your being here. We will be back on Monday. And Wayne Blanchard, our guest from last night, remember that he is writing up an affidavit that might be used for young people who have already registered for the draft to rescind it. He has already sent me some of